underscore Lundgren, L-U-N-D-G-R-E-N, at HancockBank.com. And with me this morning, I have John Portwood, Chief Investment Officer, and Jeff Tangus, Director of Fixed Income. And John, let's go ahead and get started. We'll start with the U.S. economy. Three questions, really. Is the U.S. headed into a recession? What are the probabilities and general outlook for the economy? And how is this time different than 2008?
It might be a good idea to go back a year ago and talk about what happened in 2010 when the fear of a double dip recession was probably as palpable as it was today, or as it is today, I guess. And at that time, the data did not really suggest that there was a very high probability of recession at all. So that was a case of certainly the fear of inflation fear of recession far outweighing the probability that one would occur. The situation is a little bit different now in that the probability of recession is higher than it was a year ago, looking at all of the data that we can accumulate and everybody else has accumulated. However, the situation is more really complex and nuanced than simply, all the data points in the direction of recession. Let me give you some recent information about what's going on currently to give you to kind of help give you an idea of where we are. If you look at the more recent economic data, you see that the Institute for Supply Management number ticked up a bit in the more recent announcement, suggesting that the economy is still expanding. It ticked up to a little bit over 51, and anything over 50 suggests expansion. Also, to indicate that we are in recession or right on the cusp of recession, that number has to get down toward about 45. So that number suggests that if we are going to have a recession in the future, it's not imminent. There are two other indicators that I have looked at over time that I think are pretty good at providing a guesstimate about, you know, how near a recession might be. One is a high-frequency economic data piece produced by the Philadelphia Fed. The other comes out of the Federal Reserve Bank in Chicago. Both of those indicate that we are likely to be experiencing right now below-average growth, and I don't think that's a big surprise to anybody. But neither one of those indicators looks as bad as it did in late 2007 or early 2008, nor do they look as bad as they did, interestingly, last year. So those three things together, plus the fact that we see car sales are up in the last few months compared to what was expected, suggests that while we're in a very slow growth environment, it looks more like maybe a stagnant kind of growth or a flat economy rather than recession. However, and also if you look at the basic primary leading indicators, those are still not signaling that a recession is imminent. However, you can look at a lot of other indicators and go back to the post-World War II data and look at these and say they're all in pre-recession mode. It's kind of a mixed picture. I'd say it's sort of a situation where a recession is probable, maybe 50%, I guess, certainly more probable than it was last year. However, it may require more of a shock from the European situation to tip us over the edge. I think maybe if it weren't for Europe, we'd probably be doing a lot better. So is it different from 2008? I think it is a lot. In 2008, we had a lot of excesses that had to be wrung out of the economy. And you might look at it this way in an analogous sense that, you know, we've drained the swamp of all the excesses and the bad debt, but a lot of it's still around and has created this big quagmire that we're trying to wade through at a very slow pace. So if we do have a recession, and the odds are certainly creeping up that we might at some time in the not-too-distant future. If we do have a recession, it may end up being one of these technical recessions where you don't have a substantial increase in unemployment. you don't have a substantial decline in economic activity, but maybe you slip into a negative quarter or so here and there. And if you read the NBER, National Bureau of Economic Research data on their website, they always remind people that a recession does not necessarily require two negative quarters of GDP, but just simply a prolonged and sort of pervasive period of slow growth. And that may be more likely what we're going to experience rather than a significant recession, something like we had in 2008. That doesn't appear to be in the cards given all the data we currently have. But certainly, we're in a slow growth period. We've always, talked about our being in a slow growth period. And, we'll see about the recession situation. That's certainly a risk. But if it does occur, I think it's more likely to be one of those technical recessions where perhaps it's a little worse than it is right now, but, it's like, well, so what? We're already there almost.
And what about the Eurozone? Is it a similar situation there? Are they headed into a recession?
The Eurozone is almost assuredly is heading into a recession. The data in the Eurozone is much worse than ours. The banking situation there is obviously critical, as I'm sure you've read in a lot of publications. The key there is trying to ring-fence the banks in the countries outside of Greece to try to make sure that, they survive what will ultimately be a restructuring of the Greek debt. And unfortunately, the final solution hasn't been arrived at yet. And probably one thing that caused the big sell-off yesterday, I think, in the market was the fact that several German politicians said that Germany should not put any more money into the pot to save the Greek situation. And the Germans really hold the key, according to everything we read. So they'll probably eventually step up to the plate. But, their comments yesterday were not encouraging. So it looks like, this thing is going to drag on somewhat longer.
Well, we've been dealing with Greece and the Eurozone debt issues for about 2 years now. It's been weighing on obviously our stock market and markets around the globe and the economy. How does this end? And I've heard some people say just let Greece default. Is that a scenario that might be a positive for the market?
Theoretically, the Europeans, if they never really got their act together to solve the problem completely, could, as they say, kick the can down the road forever. But the pressure apparently has built to the point where some kind of solution is going to have to be arrived at fairly soon. The yield on, and Jeff, you might help me on this, the yield on 10-year Greek bonds, I think, is over 20%. I think 1-year paper is considerably some multiple of that. So it looks like we're at a decision point for Greece. And the way the Eurozone is written, there is no provision for somebody to be kicked out of the Eurozone. And they say there's not even a provision for somebody to leave. So they almost have to work all this out from scratch. But the latest data I see indicates the Greek bonds are probably worth no more than 20 cents on the dollar. And this morning there is some discussion on the tape about a new plan for Greece that would entail debt holders taking a bigger haircut than was originally anticipated. And there was some comment 2 or 3 weeks ago that the Germans, sort of under the radar, were beginning to prepare their banks for some sort of bailout or backstop in Germany. So it looks like they're working in the direction of some sort of solution, and hopefully they'll come up with something that, will cause a ripple in the markets rather than a wave. But that is certainly the big problem we're dealing with at the moment. It's almost as if we're being the economies and the markets are being held hostage at the moment by the politicians and policy. And until we can get some of that worked out, I guess we're still going to be living with some pretty volatile markets.
Okay, let's change topics a little bit and then talk about commodities and inflation. For the first part of the year, we saw a rapid rise in commodity prices, and they've definitely rolled over the last several weeks. Do you see this trend continuing, and what are the impacts on inflation?
It looks like commodities really began to peak, some time back, and the commodity index began to roll over both on the agricultural side and the industrial side. And some of that is probably due to a slowdown in China, which has been one of the biggest users of commodities in the world, and certainly this should have an impact on the inflation rate. You can already see it, of course, in inflation rates of different countries around the world. Our inflation rate, the latest CPI number, is a bit high, but the leading indicators, considering what's happening to commodities too, suggest that leading indicators of inflation are coming down. So, as long as the economies are weak and growth is relatively slow, then it's likely that commodities are going to be in something of a downtrend and somewhat weaker for a while. But it should have a positive impact on inflation. Okay. Jeff, do you have any comments to make on that?
Not really. I think you pretty much covered it all. I think one of the things on the commodity side, it became an emotional investment and not really based on fundamentals for a while. It kind of took over. The momentum trade took over. And I think what you're seeing now is, in addition to a cooling global economy, you're also seeing people looking at the fundamentals of basic supply and demand and realizing that just commodities were way overdone.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. Let's talk about stocks, John. The stock market has had a very difficult run as of late. For the month of September, the S&P 500 was down 7% and almost 14% for the third quarter, and that was the worst quarter for the market since fourth quarter 2008. And the S&P 500 is now down 8.7% for the year. And actually, large cap stocks have done well on a relative basis compared to mid-cap stocks, which are down 13% so far this year, and small-cap stocks are down even more at minus 17% year-to-date. Is it all the Eurozone? Is that why that we're having such difficulty and so much volatility? And I guess the question everybody wants to know, we've reached the bottom, and what's your general outlook for stocks?
I think the Eurozone issues have created, with the problems that they indicate the European banks might be having and some potential spillover into our banks, probably has a lot to do with the weakness in the market the last several months. After that almost a doubling, I guess, from the March 9 low on really surprising growth in corporate profits and surprisingly high profit margins, it's not unusual to expect after that some more moderate rate of advance, particularly when you consider that we've not expected a particularly robust long-term recovery in the first place. And, our guess has been that we're going to have below average GDP growth for a long period of time, below average being something below 3. So certainly that would suggest that after that huge run in the market that we would have some sort of consolidation. But I think it's been aggravated by what's going on in Europe and the fear that we might be experiencing another Lehman Brothers moment in Europe and the spillover that might have into the U.S. markets. But when you look at relative value concepts, and I'm thinking in terms of a very moderate outlook for growth and the market where it is today, suggests that common stocks over the next 3 to 5 years probably have an expected return of somewhere in the high single-digit range. And, that's much improved from maybe the 5% number that would have been suggested a few months back before we had this 17-18% decline in stock prices. Now, the positive thing about that outlook is that it's based on very moderate GDP growth going forward. So we don't really have to have heroic numbers for economic growth over the next 3 to 5 years to get some pretty decent returns out of common stocks if we can remove some of the uncertainty that currently exists today. So Also, when you look at where stocks are today, and let's look at that 7 to 8% return possibility going out 3 to 5 years, if you buy a 10-year Treasury bond, government's going to give you 1.744% today. The inflation rate is over 3, so you've got a negative inflation-adjusted, you know, return, a negative real yield on Treasury bonds today. So I think from an investor standpoint, you have to ask yourself, you know, do you believe that perpetual recession and depression is our lot for the next 10 years, or do you expect we'll have at least moderate growth? Well, if you think we're going to have at least moderate growth, let's say 2% instead of 3% for the next 10 years, and the yield on the S&P 500 currently is 2.4, that's a pretty attractive prospect compared to 1.74 for Treasury bonds, particularly if we have some inflation down the road. So I think the market's issue, as it always is in the short term, is nobody is willing to endure short-term pain and volatility, even if the prospect for growth down the road looks pretty good. You know, we've been through this so many times lately. It probably weighs on clients considerably. But I mean, that's the numbers are telling the story. You know, if the world doesn't come to an end, then you ought to own some stocks, which makes balanced accounts, I think, look reasonably attractive. But in the near term, of course, you know, do we know whether the market's going to be 10% lower next week? No, we really don't. But, you know, where would the market look super, super cheap and be back at levels, you know, given where we are from an earnings standpoint now, even if earnings are not real great next year, you know, 15 or 20% down from here in the market would probably put your valuation back at the levels we saw in 2009. Which is like, what, 40% below where we are today. So, you know, yes, you know, some financial accident could occur that would create some problems, but then it would just, you know, the valuation would be absolutely outstanding at that point. So I think we have a near-term problem. I don't think it's enough of a problem for investors with a, you know, medium to long-term time frame to be concerned enough to not at least be invested in balanced portfolios. And while I'm thinking about balanced portfolios, getting back to the bond story, you know, and Jeff, I don't want to step on your toes because you're doing a great job managing the bond fund, but at some point, you know, bonds are going to lose their relative attractiveness, particularly if you consider we might have some inflation down the road. So we're beginning to think, and this may not, this is not a near-term thought, but we're beginning to think in terms of stocks being a much more attractive investment vehicle than bonds. We're not quite there yet, I don't think, but certainly, you know, the looks like the markets are moving in that direction.
Well, Jeff, let's go ahead and talk about the fixed income market. It was an interesting month for bonds as well. John alluded to, you know, near record low yields for both the 10-year and the 30-year Treasury. We also had the Fed introduce Operation Twist during the month. What are your general comments on the bond market, and where do you anticipate rates going in the near term?
Well, John provided the perfect entree, as you all have heard me say internally. Bonds have been a great investment, but it's a lot like being the tallest midget in the room, in that it's tough to get excited about a 1.75% Treasury, but you can't deny the fact that they've been some of the best performing investments, and certainly yields on Treasuries have continued to decline, and as John mentioned, versus inflation. Also, they don't really make a lot of long-term fundamental sense. What they do make sense, though, is a short-term flight to quality, which is exactly what we're seeing right now. So I think my primary comments on the certainly the Treasury markets in general would be that the reason we are where we are today with a record low on 10-year Treasuries at 1.75 and with the 30-year being at a yield that's the lowest it's been since 2009, it's really a function of what's going on in Europe and the flight to quality there. It's also somewhat the Fed program of driving down long-term rates, the TWIST program, as they announced at their last meeting. Wasn't really a surprise. Most people anticipated that. It was probably leaked. But the Fed is manipulating the Treasury market, as it has been doing now for some time. So you have that, and so all that combines with record low yields where we are today. Now, all yields are lower, but what we have seen recently is a widening of spreads versus corporate bonds, and the spread has widened more so as you go down the quality spectrum. So such that if a bond like an IBM bond is probably, even though yields are lower, because all yields are lower, the spread versus a comparable five-year Treasury is about 25 basis points wider for it. So that's just an indication. High-quality bonds, investors are demanding a higher premium versus Treasuries, but it's still a lower yield all in all. In general, corporate bond spreads have widened. The generic five-year investment-grade corporate bond credit default swaps up about 70 basis points in yield spread. So, again, that's another indication of the flight to quality. And then on the extreme, when you look at the high-yield area of the market, which is the below investment grade, you see yields widening by several hundred basis points over where they were just earlier this year. So the market's definitely becoming a lot more sensitive to risk, as the hot term these days seems to be risk on, risk off, and certainly in terms of the fixed income markets, it's a risk off environment. So where we see rates going in the near term, it's probably as the Fed has pretty much said out loud, we think rates are going to stay right where they are for the next 12 to 18 months for sure, and maybe even longer than that. So we're kind of in this mode, and it wouldn't surprise us, depending upon how the European situation goes, if you saw that 10-year Treasury drop to 1.5% yield. So it could yields could go even lower from here, depending upon how the Europe situation plays out.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. Let's talk a little bit about munis. This month marks the one-year anniversary of Meredith Whitney's call for between 50 and 100 significant municipal bond defaults in 2011, totaling hundreds of billions of dollars. Obviously, that prediction isn't right on the mark, but is it a matter of timing? Give us some insight on that.
Well, Meredith Whitney is eating a lot of crow these days, and I think that's just desserts, because I think she may have been a little too full of herself at some point. She's made a lot of good calls. This one was a huge loser. She was calling for hundreds of billions of dollars in defaults over this past year. We've had about $1 billion, so it's been a tiny fraction of what she anticipated, and most of those, again, have been in non-rated, kind of sort of out of the way, not any major defaults that she was calling for. So it was a call that got a lot of attention, primarily because she did it on 60 Minutes. It scared the daylights out of municipal bond investors, and we saw just tens of billions of dollars flow out of funds last year, and that certainly has not worked out. Municipal rates have declined really all throughout since about February of this year, when the market realized that it just wasn't going to work out the way that Meredith had anticipated. But municipals now even still offer attractive interest rates despite the declining rates over the last several months. They actually out-yield treasuries right now. A high-quality municipal bond yields about 2.25% on a 10-year basis, while the 10-year, as we know, yields about 1.75. So even throwing out the tax advantage of it, it out-yields a treasury bond. I think state and local government has done a good job this year of restructuring their finances, of going out and refinancing high interest rate debt for lower interest rate debt. That's been a lot of what has prevented the defaults that that some people were anticipating. So it's a great environment for municipal bonds all the way around. They're one of the highest yielding, best value investments out there. So it's one of the areas that we continue to look at, both on the tax exempt and the taxable side, for an improvement in yield, especially over over Treasury securities.
Jeff, there's been some talk of changing the tax code. Obviously, we're going to have some restructuring, and one of the things I've heard discussed is either limiting or eliminating the tax exempt status of municipal issuers. Any thought on this?
Well, of course, ever since they invented tax exempt municipal bonds, Congress has been talking about eliminating that benefit somehow. It always surfaces every couple of years. It's certainly much more of a topic now with the deficit and the debt at the federal level. What probably really brought it to people's attention most recently is it was part of the Simpson-Bowles package that we eliminate some or a portion of the tax-exempt status of those bonds. Everything I read says that if it is done, it will be done only on a forward-looking basis. They will not go back in and do it retroactively. And it will just be on new issues. So if an issue comes, the old issues will still be tax-exempt. The new issues may not be tax-exempt. Now, again, this is all just – I'm just speculating at this point because there's dozens of different possibilities out there. But in no case do I hear of anybody talking seriously about it being retroactive. Now, one possibility is that somewhere along the way they means test it, or it's done on these days it seems like that $250,000 income level is popular with the Obama administration in terms of defining wealthy people and middle class people. And so I guess that's possible that they could throw in some sort of income test to it as well. But it's still going to be a struggle because state and local government relies heavily on this, on the ability to finance debt at cheap levels. And that would certainly go against the grain in terms of stabilizing the finances of state and local government.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. If anyone has any questions, please go ahead and email them to me, David_Lundgren@HancockBank.com. And we do have one question, Jeff, and I'm gonna turn it your way. Explain what is the Fed's Operation Twist? We talked about that earlier. I don't know that we explained it.
Well, good point. Operation Twist, I don't remember. It's been tried. And, John, you may remember when exactly, in the past, some function of it. I think it was the 60s or 70s. I forget exactly when. But it's a market manipulation where the Fed basically takes cash flow from short-term securities and goes out and buys longer-term securities, being the 10-year and the 30-year. And what they're trying to do is flatten the yield curve. What QE1 and QE2 did, the Fed's most recent actions, is they essentially bought shorter-term securities and drove down short-term rates to essentially zero, which is where we were and still are. In Operation Twist, instead of buying those short-term securities now, they redirect that cash flow that comes off of either maturing securities or and, of course, the Fed owns mortgages now. They own treasuries. They own agencies. They take that cash flow from maturities and interest payments and use it to purchase longer-term securities, which is something they typically don't do. But it's had the effect of partially being responsible for the decline in 10-year rates that we've seen lately. So it's really one of the last remaining arrows in their quiver in terms of manipulating rates. So we'll see how it all works out. Most people don't think it's going to have a dramatic impact. The biggest impact is going to be made by the flight to quality out of the European situation. But at the margins, it certainly helps lower longer-term interest rates and thereby mortgage interest rates, because 30-year mortgages are priced off of a 10-year Treasury security. And so if they can drive down that 10-year rate, that also allows them to lower mortgage rates and hopefully jumpstart the housing market in the U.S.
All right, great. Thank you, Jeff. Just as a reminder, Hancock Bank and Whitney Bank provide this call for general information purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today, and we'll talk to you again next month. Thank you.